KaiserNetwork.org.
Beth Scalco, thank you so much for joining us today. I know these are difficult days. Let me ask you first, have you been able to account for your staff, and has anyone been able to get back to your offices to see what the condition is?
Yes. We have about 50 staff members who work in the HIV/AIDS program for the Office of Public Health, and it took us about 2 weeks to account for everyone. Part of that problem is due to our communication systems being so impacted. You know, cell phones aren't working, landlines are down, cable is down, so it's just very difficult to get in touch with people. But we have accounted for everyone. Everyone is safe. Most did evacuate before the storm, some not until after the storm, unfortunately. As far as our offices go, we are located about 4 blocks from the Superdome. The building did receive water in it. We're fortunately on the 5th floor. We did go in to do recovery of some equipment we needed, some data that we needed, so we were able to access the building with a police escort. Our floor is in very good shape, broken windows, but not any water damage. However, the building itself still has water in the basement, which they're attempting to still pump out at this time, and we do not have any idea when that building will be accessible to us.
You're in Washington as we're doing this interview.
Yes.
Are the people on your staff creating kind of loose networks amongst themselves so they can begin the process of working and getting back to where they were?
One of the things that we requested early on, and I, of course, have been I was back in the state after evacuating and have been primarily working out of the Baton Rouge area. One of the first things that we realized that we needed to do was to have set up a form of communication to begin rebuilding. And we did request some assistance through CDC, who was able to give us a conference call 2 times a week. We realized very quickly we would need much, much more than that to try to get ourselves organized.
And let's talk about your clients for a moment now. How many people live with HIV/AIDS in Louisiana? What kind of services did you provide? And finally, which I guess is the big question, how do you begin getting back to where you were?
Right. We have over 16,000 people living in Louisiana who are HIV infected or have an AIDS diagnosis. In the New Orleans EMA, which is the impacted area, where we have about 7,400 individuals living with HIV/AIDS. Our primary concern was how do we find our clients? We knew that many had evacuated to other states. We know that many evacuated to other areas of Louisiana. The first focus we had was on our ADAP program. We knew medications are critical.
And there are about 1,600 people?
1,600 people in the New Orleans mm-hmm. area who are on our ADAP program. The week of the storm, at the end of the week, we were able to conduct a conference call with the help of NASDAQ and HRSA with surrounding states and begin discussions about those states immediately providing medication to anyone who showed up and said that I'm an ADAP client of Louisiana. And that has occurred. To date, we have a record of over 200 people who have been helped by other states with their ADAP medication needs. Within our state, we distribute our medications through our public hospital system. We have 10 public hospitals. The New Orleans Public Hospital and HIV clinic there is totally out of commission. What we have done is to utilize the 9 remaining hospitals, which are up and running, to be distribution points for the New Orleans clients who may have relocated to another part of Louisiana. To date, we've served another 200 people through these alternate HIV clinics. However, we're still very concerned because that would only amount to 25% of the population. So we have on record 400 of the 1,600 individuals who are actually have resurfaced and have accessed medication assistance. That means we're still looking for 1,200 people.
And what do you think those people are doing, those 1,200?
What we're finding is that some left with the supply of medication, and we're thinking that as that supply of medication gets lower, they will, potentially try to access some assistance from a community-based organization or from another public hospital or an AIDS organization, and that we will begin to see more people coming forward. We are trying to use the communications that are available in terms of PSAs and posting information on the website, sending information out to shelters to make sure that individuals know here are resources to get your medication, here are resources for you to go and get assistance through a case manager who can link you up with other services.
Where are the PSAs running?
They are coming out of the Department of Health and Hospitals Communications Department. If a person is in another area of Louisiana, we hope that they are seeing some television. The question would be if people went further than that, and they're out of state and they're really unsure where to go for assistance, that they might have greater difficulty.
And talk for a moment about what your concerns are when you have a very vulnerable population. There's a loss of housing, a loss of food, all of the stress that has accompanied this. What are your worries about what happens to their immune systems, and what have you heard about some of these people?
Well, I think the stress is going to be very, very, very high, and we know that stress is going to impact the immune system negatively. I think the other concern is that, we still have areas in New Orleans that had a significant amount of contaminated water, and so there's also going to be concern about individuals as they begin to return to their homes when they can, other things that they may be exposed to that will be detrimental to them. I think in working with HIV-infected individuals, we're constantly concerned about their access to care and consistent access to care. This has put a major challenge in our way here to continue to make sure people are able to access the services and access the care that they need. Obviously, it's one more difficulty that they're going to have to overcome if they're in a location that they're not familiar with or not familiar with the services.
Have you received as much support as you would like to see from your counterparts in nearby states?
My neighboring states have been fantastic. I can't tell you how many calls I have received of saying, let me know what we can do, how can we help you. Florida immediately offered assistance to us in actually conducting the HIV testing because our laboratories, our New Orleans lab was not functioning, still is not functioning, and we were having difficulty figuring out a way how we would process confirmatory HIV testing. And Florida immediately said, we will do it for you. I feel like the neighboring states have done everything that they can to try to assist us.
And as you look at the next month, Beth, what's on the agenda? Where do you begin?
First thing is to try to determine what staff resources we have. Although we've accounted for all our staff, many are far away. How many of them can return? Do they have housing to return to? How many are going to choose not to return to the program? So we're trying to evaluate the resources we're going to have in staffing. We're trying to locate temporary office space. We have identified some pockets of space in Lafayette, in Baton Rouge, in the North Shore. However, we do not have space to accommodate 51 individuals in the same place. And, of course, we're dealing with a lot of displaced workers from New Orleans, so space is a very hot commodity right now. The other thing we're trying to evaluate is our service providers, our medical centers, who was a contractor of us providing services to individuals with HIV who will no longer be able to do it, or who will need a period of time to restructure and find a new location. So that's the second area that we're focused on to try to determine what are we going to be able to offer in what location of the state.
And what kind of challenges do you have in the immediate sense with a budget?
You know, obviously, we have always had very, very tight resources for HIV. I think there has been a FEMA request made specifically for HIV. I think some of the problems are the slowness in which those additional resources may be available. And so we're having to make decisions that say, you know, we're going to provide this service with the hope that we're going to be able to be reimbursed for these services if they exceed the dollars available and the grants that we've been awarded.
You said earlier that you were able to retrieve some of the data, some of the records you kept in your offices in New Orleans. What do you do with that record keeping? Do you send information about particular clients out to where you know those people now are?
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, we have retrieved all of our servers and all of our electronic data and our backup files. One of the first questions we were asked from other states were, can I call you and can I determine whether or not this individual is an ADAP client or not? And at that point in time, you know, we had no way to tell because we couldn't access the data. So we are currently, this week, resetting up all of our servers in an alternate location, which is outside of New Orleans. And, you know, we hope by next week we will be able to answer those types of questions and say, yes, this person is eligible. Now they don't have to reproduce documentation that they don't have, because we can, from our site, tell you, yes, they are somebody who's qualified to receive those services.
You know, despite the now weeks of coverage from the New Orleans area, I think for a lot of us outside of it, it is still hard to imagine the complexity involved in rebuilding infrastructure systems. So if you can step back for a moment and kind of describe the feeling that you're having at this moment when you face the complexity of it all.
Well, I think, you know, certainly after the storm, you're not only trying to deal with workplace issues, but both myself and my staff are trying to deal with how the storm has impacted us personally, which makes it even more difficult. You have people who are in crisis trying to provide services to other people who are in crisis. I think initially it was just terribly overwhelming, you know, and I had a good friend of mine say, okay, what you have to do is take every 4 hours at a time and nothing more than that. And that really has become, I think, some of the strategy going on with my staff and I is to say, okay, no, we cannot solve all these problems that are ahead of us right now. So let's pick the priorities and let's determine what we can do today. And that's the way we're coping with it. I think what makes it very difficult is the fact that people who have not had this experience don't, even though you see it on TV, the reality really hasn't set in. And so when I'm dealing with, you know, perhaps one of my federal partners, you know, I get questions like, well, you know, can't you give me a telephone number that works? Where can I call you back? And, you know, the bottom line is a storm of this size wipes out communications in a way that no one can anticipate. And it's been our key challenge. You know, the amount of time it takes to get information and give information is doubled and tripled because you call the person's not there, they try to call you back, and your cell phone isn't working at that time, or the circuits are overloaded so you can't get a call through, or your cable doesn't work at that moment so you can't use your email. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, just another issue to try to have people put themselves in a situation like this and look at it from that perspective as they are attempting to assist us.
Well, a final question, and I am going to ask you for a moment to look beyond the 4 hours and ask where you can reasonably expect to be this time next year where you would hope to be?
You know, I would certainly hope that our staff and our functioning is up and running. I would hope that we have identified a system of care where people who are living in the impacted areas know exactly where they can go for assistance. I think that, you know, again, one of the biggest issues is that the New Orleans that we knew before is not the New Orleans that we will have a year from now. And there will continue to be challenges, I have no doubt, a year out. The city is not going to be rebuilt in a year. So I think it's important not to set the expectations to a year from now things will be just like they were before the storm. And to be realistic and say, a year from now, I hope that our services are up and running and that people with HIV are able to access what it is that they need as quickly as possible.
And do you think a year from now that you're going to see a significant change in the numbers of people with HIV/AIDS in your region?
I think that's unknown. I think that a couple of things are going to happen. We are going to have a lot of people who evacuated out of the state or who evacuated to other areas of the state who never return to the New Orleans area. And that could be because they no longer have any housing there. Or it could be that they've decided, you know, I'm not really interested in living in a place that has hurricanes. Hurricanes coming or hurricane scares on a annual basis. So I don't know how many people that are currently in our population are going to leave the state. The second thing that we don't know is how is the storm going to impact individuals in terms of increase of risky behaviors?
Right.
And so that's something that we're very aware of and really in our prevention program trying to develop a plan that's going to look at, you know, right now while people are in crisis, they're going to be more likely to engage in risky behaviors. And I don't know if that's going to lead us to increased HIV infection in the coming 12 months.
Beth Scalco, I'm sure everyone listening to this is going to wish you well, as do I. Thank you so much.
Thank you.